Let's go
Love
ahead.
Talk Radio.
Yeah, let's have some fun. Good evening, everyone. At the moment, a simultaneous broadcast here as I'm still on Rabble calling this game at the same time here on blogtalkradio.com/ForYourSteensFire. United States versus Trinidad and Tobago postgame show will be on simultaneously on Rabble. Hope to have on Robert Haig Jr. once this match is officially in the books. As the United States leading 4-0, talking about this one, of course. It looked like it could be a real tough one here when the first half got underway. And once again, any form of points is going to be, you know, needed for the United States in this one. But it looks like right now, that the United States leading 4-0, that this one is done and dusted, all over but the shouting. And there is Michael Bradley having a conversation with Kevin Molino, of course. Kevin Molino with Orlando City in MLS. Michael Bradley with Toronto FC in MLS. So at least two players that play in MLS know each other very well. We're in the final minute of regulation now. In this one, here comes another quick pass. It's Jose Altidore. Altidore! Over the crossbar. But this one, it looks like it is all going to be over anyway. There is some stoppage time. Nice pass from Christian Pulisic to Altidore. He tried to chip Marvin Phillip, but that ball is well over the crossbar. I think we've got 2 minutes of stoppage time here in the second half. I didn't think there'd be any, but hey, why not? We'll just add some more, and we'll see what happens going forward. Trinidad and Tobago, save made by Howard. It popped up, and he grabs it. Howard, just at the top of his area, is going to probably throw the ball back in, and we'll see what happens here as we keep on going with this matchup. It's 4-0 United States. All right, 2 minutes of stoppage time. We are about 1 of 2 done here. And Tim Howard will kick the ball out. Let's see if the referee, nope, he'll just continue to play it. Trinidad will have possession. And they're going to attack. Moving it forward. Trinidad trying to at least get a goal in here if they can. A quick cross in the middle. Another cross that's blocked. But recrossed, shot, and well high. And well wide of the front post. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to the live broadcast on Rabble. Hopefully you can listen to it once again, a simulcast here through Rabble and blogtalkradio.com as we get ready to kick off this postgame show very soon once this match is officially over and done with. Tim Howard now will hold on to the ball. We'll see what happens. United States fans are excited. They're clapping, handshakes all around. You know what that means? The final whistle is blown, and the United States will win Group C in the semifinal round. They will get ready to take on Mexico in the hexagonal. So, on Rattle, thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And join me right now on blogtalkradio.com/ForYourSteensFire. Bye-bye at Rabble. And hello, Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining me tonight as we get to discuss some more of this wonderful things that we love to talk about. And once again, it's just wonderful to discuss. Wonderful to discuss what's going on here. Wonderful to talk about what's going on Blog Talk Radio. But once again, it's just wonderful to have you on and to talk about what's going on here. So thank you very much for joining me. Once again, the Postmatch Show is underway here. And all you can say is this is what you wanted. This is how it happened. And it's just a good thing to see. Once again, 4-0 for the United States. 4-0 for the United States as we get ready for this big, big hexagonal matchup coming for the USA now as they are already inside World Cup qualifying. As it is over and done with, and now we have, of course, right now on Fox Sports 1, Mexico hosting Honduras, as we get ready for this one. And joining me right now, of course, my good friend Robert Hay, who watched this one as well. First of all, Robert, my apologies. I thought I sent you the okay. That's my fault.
It's all right. Just happy to be on tonight.
There you go. But anyway, you know, this one, I have to say, a very convincing performance by the United States. And, you know, you were wondering what was going to happen in that first half because, you know, I thought maybe Trinidad Tobago had a good, solid defensive posture, but at the end of the day, the United States held serve and they won 4-0.
Yeah, you know, the match started off very slowly. Definitely, I think the U.S. was trying to find its footing, and again, it had a collection of players that were playing together for the most part, a little bit thrown together by Jurgen Klinsmann, trying out some different combinations, and you had a Trinidad and Tobago team which had accomplished already what it had set out to accomplish, and for them this game was kind of icing on the cake if they could have gotten a result from here. So it definitely had a slow feel to it. I was a little unkind, I think, to certain people on Twitter when I talked about how the game was a little bit boring in the first half, but the U.S. at the end of the second half kind of turned things on and, was able to get the result that they needed. Of course, any time that you go up against Guatemala and what they're doing right now, everything's going to seem boring. But, the U.S. basically checked the boxes they needed. They're onto the hex. And now things get very interesting from here.
Well, if you want to know, Guatemala is destroying St. Vincent and Grenadines 9-3.
Oh, they haven't notched 10 yet, huh?
No, not yet, but it doesn't really matter anyway. They're done.
Yeah. It was just a matter of how high they got with their with the number of goals they had there.
That's all that matters. But I will say this, as we talk about what is going on in World Cup qualifying, let me ask you about USA for a second. What did you think about the insertion of Sasha Kljestan as well as Christian Pulisic with these two games that they played?
Well, I think certainly in the game tonight, those are probably the two best field players on the pitch for the U.S. I think Pulisic gave a little creative spark to the U.S. team. He certainly showed some good ball skill and showed some ability to pick out good passes that, especially in the Trinidad and Tobago half, didn't find players, didn't find his forwards or players making runs, because I think a lot of that had to do with his teammates more than him, but he was certainly a threat throughout the game. So I thought he played very well and showed a lot. Kljestan is always going to be kind of that borderline case of, you know, is he good enough to make the team, or is the team good enough or not quite good enough that he's good enough to make the team? And, I think he's certainly, if you go by results in in where it matters, results where you come in and play, then I certainly think he's making a very good case for why he should be certainly a contender for the World Cup roster, or at least the qualifying roster from here on out. But that doesn't always matter. Of course, with Jurgen Klinsmann, he tends to like his players and stick with them, whether they, you know, sky the ball over the net consistently, Chris Wondolowski. But, with what he's done in the past couple games, you can't sit there and say that he doesn't deserve to be on the field. He certainly made a case for why he needs to be, at least in this conversation of whether he'll make the final roster or, you know, the A-team roster, whatever you want to call it. You can't do any more than that, than just make a case for yourself. And he's done that in these past couple games. And, I've always kind of liked him. I always thought he's a pretty good player. I'm glad to see him do well here.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm in the camp of we know he has the talent and the ability to go out there and probably do well. But I think you would agree with me that we can't force feed the kid to go out there and to perform, because we don't want to lose him mentally. I mean, we can rattle off names in the past that we've seen that has not done well when they've come on for the national team, or at least, you know, come into their own and stuff, to be honest. I mean, we can rattle it off. We can rattle off Juan Agudelo, Freddie Adu. You know, these are kids that were supposed to do something for the national team, and they fell out of favor because they just couldn't continue that way because of ego. And really quick, Robert, if you're watching Univision right now, Kyle Lahren has scored for Canada, so they're up 1-0 on El Salvador. And I'll get to that thing that happened today in the news with El Salvador for a moment. But that's why I think Pulisic, I think we have to make sure that we don't lose this kid the way we've lost past hopefuls, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I think a lot of that had to do with the next great hope. With the U.S. consistently having glaring holes into the roster for, you know, year in, year out, you have these kids that have come in, and I say kids because they're teenagers who have shown a lot of promise, and they're immediately tagged as the person, the player that's going to put the U.S. over the top and lead them to greatness and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, it's kind of a sad statement how we burn out players so quickly, at least at the international level. And with a lot of these players, of course, with this hype comes the pressure to go play at certain places or for certain kinds of teams, and when they might not be ready for it, or it might not just be a good fit. I think what the nice thing about Pulisic is, already you're hearing from U.S. Soccer kind of pump the brakes a little bit on him. And he's also, coming up through a very good club system where he's not going to be asked to do a ton. He's going to be asked to actually prove his worth. And so far, he's playing well, and he's getting playing time for them, at least for their B team, I think is what they go by. But he's getting certain, he's definitely getting some playing time. He's definitely showing his potential for the club and for country. And I think it's fine to start him against Trinidad and Tobago. I hope he's not started against Mexico, and maybe some of these other top flight CONCACAF teams. I think he's better coming off the bench in certain situations. But I do hope that, over the past couple of games where he's played well, this isn't, fans don't run with this again as, this is definitive, he's the greatest thing that's ever gone, come to wear a U.S. national team jersey. So hopefully we've all learned our lesson. I think U.S. soccer has, and some of the players have, but hopefully the fans can do the same thing.
Yeah, I agree. And look, there's nothing wrong with rooting for these kids. There's nothing wrong with celebrating the future that's supposed to come up for this national team. I mean, I would love to see, Pulisic becoming a superstar, of course. But once again, I think the number one thing that we have to be concerned about is this, is that we cannot, as you've said already, we can't expect to burn this kid out. And right now, I think he's doing okay with what he's been given with. But I agree with you. I think that hex match against Mexico I truly believe that he should not be starting. He should still come off the bench. And there is still plenty of time for this kid to develop, of course. I mean, he's played, for goodness sakes, Borussia Dortmund. I mean, that's one of the top clubs in all of the German Bundesliga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think he'll have plenty of time to come up and play against top-flight competition. You know, this is one of the things that we always hear about. We want our players to be able to do, which is play against the best and play against different systems and things like that. So, you know, I think he'll have the opportunity to develop at the club level, and that can only help him at the international level as well.
Yeah, very, very true. You know, I have to say that I thought, and going back to Kleistein for a second here, I thought he was in fantastic positions to receive the ball, to pass the ball, especially he was in a great position to block the clearance that led to the first goal of the game late in the first half. So my question to you is this. If Clint Dempsey can't go anymore for the national team, not because he doesn't want to, not because Jurgen Klinsmann's telling him no, but because of this irregular heartbeat that he just developed, or maybe he's had it for a while, but it never got this bad, do you think Sascha Kleistein takes over where Clint Dempsey's spot is?
I think that he would be – I think that what he would take would be probably a spot on the bench. I think that he would be a player that could come in as a substitute. I don't think he slots in automatically as a starter. But I do think he would be an option off the bench, and we would have a spot for him there. I think that probably – you know, I still think Klinsmann will trust maybe some more of his veterans that he loves to come in. And if we're talking about a Mexico or a game that really matters – I think he would rely on some of his veterans that he always does rely on when push comes to shove. And so maybe Kleistein would be an option off the bench. But, I mean, I certainly think that he has the skill set to contribute something in certain situations. And I think he showed that in this match, these past two matches. And, you know, like I said, he's made the case for his inclusion on this roster, at least to be in the conversation.
Yep. Definitely agree with you there because, you know, don't get me wrong. I don't want to see Dempsey gone. I don't. I think the United States still needs Clint Dempsey. That's for sure. I truly believe that the United States truly needs Clint Dempsey to be out there. But if we're being honest with ourselves, you know, this is a serious thing, Robert. And we can't have Clint destroy, you know, you know, fall flat on the pitch just because he thinks he's okay, you know, and he has this condition.
Yeah, and, you know, for goodness sakes, he's almost the same age as me, and that's pretty ancient at this point. This is a conversation that, you know, we U.S. soccer fans have been having for a while and have had to have for a while, and that's what do you do after Clint Dempsey? You know, arguably, even though he's still scoring goals at the international level up until – you know, recently when he was diagnosed or, you know, has this issue, his effectiveness is still there, but it was still, you know, he was more of a beneficiary of some sloppy, ugly goals rather than great soccer skill. So the question has become, you know, for the longest time, how do you replace him when that time comes? And it's probably, you know, sooner rather than later. So I think the big thing is, you know, how do players like Bobby Wood come in? Are they going to be able to come in and contribute? I didn't play well tonight, which is surprising for me. You know, I've been big on him, high on him for a while, and might have just had an off night, but I was hoping that, you know, he would show a little bit more because I think he's a good starting 11 option for the U.S. It also puts a little bit more pressure on Josie Altidore to continue to produce. Now, he had another good game today, but we all know that Josie is a little bit inconsistent, both health-wise and performance-wise. And so, you know, if there is no Clint Dempsey, that just makes him even more important as the veteran forward on this team. So, you know, not the same position per se as a Clint Dempsey. Obviously, Clint Dempsey plays a little bit differently on the pitch, but having that veteran forward makes that's who Josie Altidore is now, and he becomes a lot more important in the scheme.
It really does. Right now, ladies and gentlemen, Canada is hosting El Salvador in their final World Cup qualifying match. They lead.
Our guards
whoops.
Have evolved.
I hate this. Hold on.
72 hours.
You're trying to. You're trying to do a show, and of course, that's got to pop up. So I have to go to the laptop, Robert. I'm sorry. I'm like Grand Central over here. But if we can get over to the ESPN FC article, because I want to talk about this. First of all, I want to commend the El Salvador Federation addressing what happened from a person from their own country who was representing a Honduran millionaire, okay? I don't know if there's a lot of millionaires in Honduras, unless maybe, you know, he knows Donald Trump, but that's a separate problem that we're not going to get involved with. But but apparently this person named Ricardo Padilla was offering the El Salvadorian prizes, the national team players' prizes, whether they won, drew, or lost to Canada tonight. And I want to say to the Salvadorian Football Federation, you know, kudos. I want to say congratulations for informing the media and everyone else that they were offered bribes. Whether it was in good nature or for fun or if it was a serious thing, I want to say congratulations to the Salvadorian Football Federation because, let's be honest, this situation needs to be taken care of. And if you agree with me, Robert, because of after everything that's happened with the FIFA scandal, the CONCACAF scandals for financial bribery, I would like to think the new president of CONCACAF as well as the new president of FIFA should join forces and sue this Honduran millionaire for attempted bribery of the El Salvadorian national team.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very serious situation, and I think people, I think even today people have a tendency to kind of just look at the other way when it comes to bribery and match fixing in soccer in the Western Hemisphere. I think people tend to think that this is a situation that happens maybe in Africa, Asia, or maybe Europe, lower leagues, but this brings to light the fact that there's a very thin line between having a good, honest, I hate saying the word honest when it comes to CONCACAF. It's hard to say.
Come on, Robert. Yeah, but, you've got to break that mold sooner or later.
Yeah, we'll stick with honest and CONCACAF in the same sense. But, you know, you have a good, honest CONCACAF tournament and something that's marred by gambling and by corruption and those kind of things. And the fine line here is you know, El Salvador coming forward and doing the right thing. Now, if they wouldn't have, what would have happened? Would there have been consequences? Would people have found out? I don't know. And that's kind of the scary thing. And that's something that should be scary for all soccer fans is the fact that this is so easy to go a certain dark way, which is just, corruption of these games that kind of matter. So I think this should be a wake-up call for a lot of soccer fans to realize, you know, we've had wake-up calls in the past. We've had these great books by great journalists who highlight how easy it is to corrupt soccer. But it still hasn't seemed to sink in with us soccer fans and to be aware and vigilant of this. But I do hope this is kind of a wake-up call for CONCACAF and for the federations where they can sit there and say, all right, we've got to make sure that we're on guard for this because it's very easy for players and management to get kind of seduced into, being involved in these kind of schemes for a number of reasons. And it's up to the management and the league, or excuse me, the federations to police this as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you there. I think it's time for the federations to, start getting their lawyers out because I think it's time for them to, find out who this individual is, find out, where in Honduras he lives, and deal with him as swift as possible. Now, obviously, I would think the Honduran Federation would like to help out their CONCACAF brothers, and especially the UNCAF zone, the Central American zone, and even the UNCAF offices, to say, hey, listen, we need to find this guy, and we need to teach him a lesson. Because how many people have been pilfered in the Swiss hotel that has been very, very popular in the past? You know what I mean? I mean, it's time to go after this guy. It's time to go after him and to teach him a lesson, because they just – how many members have we lost due to this bribery scandal? Not just once, but at least twice.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a you know, a number of consequences for soccer, you know, in this hemisphere and for, you know, confederation. So, this is just something that I'm glad it's getting the coverage that it's getting, and that it's hopefully journalists. You know, there's a lot of good soccer journalists out there who are good at hunting down these kind of things and hunting down the facts, and I really hope that they continue to be diligent on this and to keep following it, and it doesn't just go by the wayside of, we've done our job of pointing this out, and we're just going to, you know, go from there. I really do hope the story keeps getting followed up on.
Yeah, I hope so too, because these shenanigans, they have to end sooner than later, because this is getting ridiculous. And I really do hope that it does end quickly, so we don't have to go through another bunch of scandals like we've already had last year, and just, you know, just a lot of shenanigans that doesn't deserve to get interfered with, if you know what I mean. But anyway, let's continue on here with what the USA is doing right here. And once again, they are in the hexagonal. They had to win. Well, let's be honest with ourselves here. A draw would have just given them 1 point ahead of Guatemala a draw would have basically been enough for the United States just to get into the hexagonal. But 3 points wins the group. Would you have been disappointed if they drew against Trinidad and Tobago, or would you be like, no, look, they're in the hex. That's all that really matters. Just get to the final round and just worry about the other games when we start off in November.
Yeah, I think I would have been disappointed, because I think a game like this, you know, especially with some of the players that have been brought in, is the point is that you're trying to see – you're trying to get your roster set up for the games that really, really matter, which is, you know, the hexagonal and then the World Cup after that. And one of the things that I harp on in your show so often is the fact that Jurgen Klinsmann doesn't seem to have – kind of that. I mean, he has his starting 11 and a couple of subs, but he doesn't really have that. I don't know if this is the appropriate phrase. I'll use it, a football phrase. This depth chart of U.S. soccer. You know, if player A goes down, player B steps in. You know, and you see this with some of the best teams in the world. You know, with the Germanys of the world. Is if a player goes down, there's a player they know exactly who steps in to take their place. You know, there's this natural progression of players that have come through the national team, and if a player falters, then somebody else steps up and they try and find a replacement, but they have at least this idea of who is going to be coming in, whereas the U.S. is still struggling, I think, to figure out who their starting 11 is and also who kind of that next step down or the next player to step in is. And really where the value in these games comes in is figuring out who those players are and really where everybody shakes out. So I think a draw in this situation would have just kind of muddled that a little bit more. I don't think it's definitive in any way. A result like this doesn't make it definitive that, for example, Pulisic should be starting or something like that. But it does help in terms of hopefully pushing Jurgen Klinsmann to say, you know, here's who our starting 11 is going to be and here's who I can rely on. I think this is especially important in the back line, which is an area where, you know, we keep struggling to figure out who our starters are. It looks like, you know, Jeff Cameron had another good night tonight, and Steve Birnbaum, I think, is pushing for some time in matches that matter. But the sooner we can start settling on these players, the better, I think, for the U.S. in qualifying and then for the World Cup 2018.
You know, I think Steve Birnbaum deserves at least a look at in center back, because I feel like he's been a very good central defender, not just for D.C. United, but, you know, when he had his times with the national team, you know, the Camp Cupcake games in January, you know, what he has shown at times when he does get the call. I'd like to see – I think Steve Birnbaum is that next available center back for this team. But once again, you've said it correctly. We have not seen a roster or at least a depth chart the way the United States national team should have, like what Germany has, maybe like what Italy has. Now that France is improving, Spain has. I'm not going to say England, because I still think England is still, I wouldn't say crap, but I'll say a bit shoddy. How's that? I'm being kind, I think.
Chaotic. How about chaotic for the England setup?
That's fine.
I think that's the way to go with them. But, you know, I think with Birnbaum, I think the other thing, just to go back to him for a second, is you're right. I think he's a good kind of depth player for this team. He's got a lot of he's got a very good skill set that I think translates well to the international game. I think that I would hesitate to say he's a definite starter. Because I think there's other players who have more experience in a lot of different ways that are ahead of him. However, I will say when he makes his inevitable move to Europe, I think that that could be the kick that could really propel him forward into the conversation for starting 11 for this team. I think if he moves to Europe in this, you know, after this MLS season and goes to the right team, then I think you're looking at a player who could be a real asset for the U.S. national team in the years to come. I think he just needs that seasoning at a higher level to really get him there and to vet him a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you there, and we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen over there. At the moment, folks, just some quick World Cup qualifying scores to give you. Halftime, Costa Rica leading 1-0 on Panama. And once again, that's more for position than it is for qualify. Both Costa Rica and Panama already into the hexagonal. Mexico is 0-0 with Honduras at the moment. Canada has an early 1-0 lead right now on El Salvador. Right now, the differential is at 4 for Canada. Obviously, they're going to need a lot of help from Mexico to score some goals on Honduras. Canada has already had two chances squandered, unfortunately. And once again, we already know 4-0 United States final, Guatemala 9, St. Vincent Grenadines 3. So Guatemala and St. Vincent are eliminated in Group B. In Group C. But let me ask you this, Robert. Jamaica has been eliminated from Friday evening when they lost 2-0 in Panama after their Gold Cup run last year that beat the United States in the semis. Fine, lost to Mexico in the final, which we expected that to happen. But how disappointed are you to see Jamaica fall flat on their face in this semifinal round?
Yeah, I think the tournament is a little less, without them in there. I think Jamaica is really coming into the it seemed like they were really coming into kind of moving up on the CONCACAF world, where they were going to be able to never probably be as talented as the U.S. and Mexico, but at least be the kind of team that has enough talent to cause problems and to be a consistently good enough team to really challenge, you know, consistently for either, you know, finals in a tournament or at least qualifying for the World Cup. I mean, they're fun to watch play. They've got some recognizable talent. I thought they were well managed, and certainly have players that, you know, most even casual soccer fans would recognize. So I think that it's kind of disappointing for if you're a soccer fan that they're not going to make it. I know that you probably some of the teams that make it over them will disagree with my assessment of that. But, you know, just their style and what they bring to these CONCACAF tournaments and the way that they've grown as a soccer country, It's just disappointing, I think, and it's too bad for them that they won't get a chance to try and make a World Cup.
Yep, that's really tough. I mean, look, you want to see this confederation grow and become tougher to face. We all know the quality, as we've already said, depth chart that happens in UEFA, CONMEBOL, South America. You know, you're hoping in CONCACAF, but you're hoping at CONCACAF you see this year too, not just from Mexico, not just from the United States, but from Jamaica, but from Canada, our fellow, I'll say it, our brothers in this confederation of CONCACAF. You want to see this confederation grow and grow and grow and become bigger and better. And, you know, we're seeing Panama, that's normally a baseball nation, doing well in soccer, and Panama has now become a crawl. You know, they stick into your crawl like, you know, it's like an annoyance.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just good enough where they can challenge you and get you on a bad day. I think that's really good that's a good development for CONCACAF, because, you know, it wasn't going to become overnight where we're challenging UEFA for, you know, the best soccer federation out there, but, you know, it's getting to the point where these kind of teams like a Panama or Jamaica are challenging Mexico and the US to not just skate through these tournaments where it's going to be U.S. and Mexico every time, and that's really going to be the only challenge. You see that in some other one or two other confederations where you've got a top team or a top two teams, and everybody else is just kind of a road bump on the way to the to qualifying. But you know, and they also bring different looks and different kinds of styles of play to these games, and I think that's again a good opportunity for the U.S. when they play these teams, and they play Mexico and Panama, to just kind of get a different try out some different styles, different players, and different kinds of things against different styles of play, and get them ready for. I mean, Panama's not Spain in any way, but at least it might give a different look that might help them help the U.S. down the line when they play a better team.
Yeah, you're right. Though I want to ask you a question about our goalkeepers. Now, obviously, we always produce these great goalkeepers in Major League Soccer. Americans do well. We do very well with goalkeeping. And I'm not saying that Brad Guzan is not good enough. I think he's a solid keeper. But since Tim Howard, this is going to be it. This is a swan song, obviously. He's no longer going to be the starting keeper for our national team. And, you know, we knew this was going to happen someday. And someone had to step up and take over. But are you a little worried right now with the goalkeeping situation internationally for our national team? Because, like I've said already, I mean, it's not like I don't trust Brad Guzan. I think he's a solid keeper. But are we going to see the upper echelons of what Tim Howard was doing for the national team, like what Tony Meola did, like what Casey Keller did and Brad Friedel did? Are we not back at that level? Or am I just assuming something that should not be assumed?
Well, no, I think it's a very good point, because I think that you get a – it seems like we're in a kind of a situation where we haven't been in a while in the U.S. where we don't really know what the keeper situation is for the national team. I mean, like you said, you've listed a number of really good players that have played for the U.S. And for the longest time, you know, especially recently with Tim Howard, it's been assumed that this is a strength for this team. But now you have a Tim Howard that's kind of hanging on, and I think he's still getting a lot of playing time just because of this uncertainty with Brad Guzan, where you have a situation where will Tim Howard be, you know, on this squad for Russia? I mean, it's certainly seeming like it. And now the question is he going to be a starter? I think Brad Guzan moving to Middlesbrough is a good move for him, because it's gives him a chance to kind of show off that he is a quality keeper. And I know that's a weird thing to say, but I think having played on Aston Villa last year, I mean, that's just – Aston Villa was a tire fire in a lot of ways, which is unfortunate. And Middlesbrough is not exactly, you know, a top team in England, but it is a more stable team, and that will it will be fighting for, you know, a again, not a, they're not going to finish first or second, but this is the kind of team where there will be some stability and there will be a chance for Guzan to compete and really play well and prove both at club and country level that he's a top-flight keeper, or at least a quality, good enough keeper to be a number one. So I think it's a good opportunity for him to kind of show the U.S. Soccer system that he is. He can take this mantle from Tim Howard. The question is what happens if Guzan stumbles? And he doesn't play well for Middlesbrough, and he continues – well, I won't say continues. He doesn't play well for the U.S. national team. You're going to have to rely on Tim Howard in a lot of ways because the U.S. system hasn't settled on that number three. We played with a lot of number threes over the past couple of years, you know, taking some keepers from MLS. We've taken some people from other teams in Europe. But there isn't really that sense of who that next person is. You know, obviously I have my opinions on who could be. But, you know, I think – if you polled 20 U.S. national team fans, people who watch and follow the national team, you'd probably get five or six different answers as to who that number three is. And that's a kind of a scary situation. We're relying, again, on Tim Howard if Greg Guzan isn't up to standard to be our keeper. And Tim Howard's done a lot of really good things for this country. He's done a lot of great things for this team. But, you know, he is not the Tim Howard that we used to have. I mean, it's just that's the nature of the game and the nature of aging. And even though he played well tonight, I don't think you can rely on him to be the top flight keeper we need for this team if we are serious about maybe making a little bit of a run at the World Cup. So the timeline is very short to figure this out, but I think if you're Jurgen Klinsmann right now, you're seriously thinking about bringing in consistently that third keeper and getting them some playing time. You know, you've got a New Zealand friendly coming up and some other stuff, you know, some opportunities, including in the Hex. This player needs to be, this third goalkeeper needs to be in and consistently. And if it's going to take screwing over an MLS team to do it, fine. That's what you got to do. But you've got to identify this kind of depth chart for your keeper position so that way if Guzan stumbles, we can at least figure out where to go from there.
Well, I can give you two potential third stringers that probably been used already for the national team, and I'm not trying to hurt your feelings, but because, you know, he has been called in before, I don't see him really going deep into the national, or at least as a first-string keeper, unfortunately. I'll say this right now, Sean Johnson, Chicago Fire, and Bill Hamid. I mean, I think we can be honest with ourselves here and say that these are the two guys who had the potential of becoming a starter in the future, but they just haven't shown it to be on that big level, I believe. Do you agree with me? At least MLS-wise, they're solid. Nothing wrong with them at all in Major League Soccer. But international-wise, both of them, you just don't know if they have the potential, and maybe it's already too late for them to at least, you know, knock Guzan off as a starter.
Yeah, I don't think it's too late for either of them. I think that's the nice thing about the keeper position is, you know, you can mature a little bit more before you really hit your stride. I think the big – I'll speak to Bill Hamid. I think the big thing for him is injuries. I think consistent – every time he really starts to show his quality consistently, there's an injury that derails him, at least for the national team. So I think that's the big thing for him is consistently staying healthy and I think it's inevitable. I mean, I think he's got the talent that he could be in the long term, you know, a challenge, the number one spot for keeper with the U.S. national team. But I don't think it's right now because of that consistency and or at least that health consistency and the fact that he probably is another player who would benefit from moving overseas to, as much as I hate to say that, to get some playing time. But Sean Johnson probably, too. You know, I'm going to sound like somebody who's on one side of the debate, you know, this whole debate about U.S. soccer, whether it's better to play in the U.S. or outside, but another player who might benefit from a change of scenery, just not that because he's playing poorly, but just to show that quality and to introduce a new challenge to himself. But, you know, again, I think that kind of proves the point. There's two people there, and, you know, you can probably name five or six others that could be, you know, potential on this list, but you know, nobody's really either been given the consistent opportunity or had the chance to seize that opportunity when they've been given it. So it's kind of a new situation for U.S. fans. It's something we're not used to, which is, it feels a lot like England, where we don't really know who our starting keeper is. We don't really have faith in our starting keeper. And I think the good thing, though, is that Brad Guzan could at least prove that he can affirm that he is should be the number one, whereas maybe with England it's a little bit harder to feel confident in whoever the number one is.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Once again, everyone, this is the post-match show. The United States defeating Trinidad and Tobago by a final of 4-0. They leapfrog Trinidad and Tobago to take the top spot in Group C. Trinidad and Tobago finished second. That meant elimination for both Guatemala and St. Vincent Grenadines. Current scores right now in the CONCACAF World Cup qualifying in the 56th minute. 1-0 for Costa Rica ahead of Panama. Once again, that's for the top of the group. Battle. Jamaica and Haiti are both eliminated. This is for pride. It's 0-0.
Mm-hmm.
Canada leading El Salvador by 1-0. They need more goals to be scored for themselves. And Mexico 0, Honduras 0 in the first half in the 41st minute at the Estadio Azteca. And that also needs to get some goals in there as well. So we'll see what happens there. But it looks like we're going to get halftime here at BC Place in Vancouver, British Columbia, as the Canucks are up 1-0. And they need not only to score goals themselves, Robert, they need help from Mexico to get some goals scored on Honduras.
Yeah, and I think I think it's a nice little story. For the longest time, I think we've wondered if when Canada is going to pull it together. I mean, they have the kind of system where in the talent pool where they could be one of these teams like a Panama or something, where or even better than them, where they could be a consistent, you know, CONCACAF threat. And you know, it's going to take small steps. And I think probably if you talk to a lot of U.S. fans, they're kind of rooting for Canada.
Absolutely.
Just because, for a number of reasons. So it'd be nice to have Canada as a rival instead of Mexico. I say that now, but I think you'll find a lot of people rooting for Canada, so we'll see how they do.
You know, watching their road game in Honduras, I felt Floro had his tactics wrong. I think he was looking for the goal and trying to defend after it. And I just think that was the wrong initiative. They should have just attacked and attacked and attacked. And, you know, if they would have gotten at least a point out of it, then it would be a different situation here. And they wouldn't have to worry. Now, the halftime whistle has been blown in Vancouver. It is 1-0 Canada. So while 3 points is a must here for Canada still, they are at right now a -4 on the differential. Honduras is even on the differential. So right now they need another 3 goals to get level there. And hopefully for Canada that Mexico can put a goal past Honduras. And we'll see what happens. But, I'm one of those that wants to see Canada get back into the hexagonal, at least to fight for the top 3 spots for the automatic qualification to the World Cup, why not the 4th-place finish. Let's see what they can do in the second half if they can get more than just a goal. Let's see if Mexico can, get a goal on Honduras, because right now I think it's pivotal. It's pivotal for Canada to try and get into this situation. You know, it's been a long time since I think it was 1986 that they were in the World Cup.
Yeah, and for a country like Canada who has, they participate, obviously they have teams in MLS and had a number of good players come through, and the players in their system play for a number of different European clubs and of course in the MLS and some other some of the lower divisions, the talent is there, it seems like, to at least be a good team, a good country, at the international level. And it just I think part of it is the tactics, part of it's the setup, part of it's the coaching. Coaches, rarely do you find a coach who gets criticized for losing when conservative. The coaches tend to get criticized for being overly ambitious. So I think you'll find rarely a coach will sit there and say, we're going to go for it when it's easier to sit back. So I think it's a matter of finding that right combination of management and talent management and get the system set up where they're consistently placing or doing well in different tournaments, not just in you know at the senior level, but also at the youth levels and things like that. So once you have success at the youth levels, it makes it a little bit easier to have success at the senior level, which again the U.S. is finding out it's hard to do when you're not winning at the youth level.
Yeah, it's really tough, and we'll see what happens as we go along here. Okay, Robert. So right now, let's just assume Honduras does qualify with hexagonal. At this moment in time, United States, Panama, Costa Rica, Mexico, Trinidad and Tobago, and just for the heck of it, Honduras. You know it's grueling. These are the games that everyone loves to watch, loves to have fun seeing. The top six nations within this confederation fighting for three automatic spots and a possible playoff against the fifth-place Asian side. Who do you see getting out of the group, out of the hex, and going to the World Cup as well as the playoff?
All right. So I think that even at this point, with the way they're playing, you still have to say the U.S. and Mexico in some order, probably Mexico and U.S. are your top two teams in this federation. I think that's the way it's going to be for now until proven otherwise. So I think that's your guess there. So everybody else is fighting for an automatic spot and a playoff spot. Yeah, give me the list one more time just to make sure I have it in front of me.
That's fine. List. No, it's fine. Here it is. USA, Panama. We're assuming it's Honduras right now, the way it looks at the moment. Costa Rica, Mexico, Trinidad, and Tobago.
Okay. I think you have Costa Rica as your third place team right now. I think they're good enough that they could even challenge top two. There's just so much talent on that roster that get plays. It's for some good European clubs that I think that, you know, they're good enough that they could challenge the top two and get in there. So probably it's down to that playoff spot. And, we've talked about Panama earlier today, and I do like, I don't know why, but I do like Panama. Not as much as the top three, but I do think they bring a lot of talent and ability to this tournament. I think they are good enough that they can steal some points maybe when they shouldn't have, and that'll slot them into fourth place, whereas the other teams, you know, I think are going to have more trouble. So I think you're going to see Panama get into the playoffs and probably win the playoff match if they're playing an Asian Confederation team. I think they're good enough to make the World Cup that way. But, after your top three, there's a little bit of a gap, but I think Panama is the one that takes that fourth slot.
All right. So that sounds pretty good. And I agree with you. USA, Mexico will have the top two. But here's what I see. Even though Costa Rica is solid at home, I'm going to say this right now. I think Panama might take the third automatic spot, and I think Costa Rica will go to the playoff. I think for some reason, while Costa Rica has done well undefeated in the semifinal group stage, I have a funny feeling they're going to have some issues in this final round. I've seen some moments where some of their attackers have not been clinical, and right now it's been like 1-0 victories, a goal victory. They've had a couple of draws. They've had a draw here. At Jamaica. And I know the old adage is you draw on the road, you win 3 points at home. That's how it goes in World Cup qualifying. But I just have this funny feeling Costa Rica I think they're going to have some issues. I really believe they're going to have some issues, and they may fall into the fourth spot. I think Panama has improved tremendously, you know, when it comes to developing players, and I think they've become a bigger threat than what they've normally shown in the past. They've improved every single year, whether it's in the Gold Cup qualifying, World Cup qualifying. Some of their clubs in the that have performed in the CONCACAF Champions League, obviously like Arabe Unido, you know, Blas Perez, it's in MLS right now. I believe Panama might take that next step, and they won't have to worry about making it to the playoff position. I think they're going to take that third spot.
Yeah, you know, I think that if a team were to stumble, it would be Costa Rica. But, you know, looking at I think a key for Costa Rica is Keylor Navas, depending on his health and how he is able to get back into form. I know that there's – I think the current target is end of the month for him, for the club health. But I think that if he's able to come back in some kind of fitness form close to what he had been, I think he's an X factor in this tournament, because having a keeper of that quality, I mean, talking about the U.S. and their keeper situation, having a keeper of that quality is huge, 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 especially in a tournament like this. And then when you just go down the list of players that could be called up for Costa Rica, I mean, there's just players all over that are getting quality playing time for some good clubs. I mean, you look at the list of players who they play for at the club level, and it's, you know, I know that's not determinative necessarily in a tournament like the hexagonal, but you know, there's some definite talent there, and I think there's some options that Costa Rica can bring in some players that are very good and can replace some players that might be out of form. You know, for example, in Alvaro Savarillo, you know, looking at this list, I wouldn't even probably call him up for this squad at this point, and they have the depth where they could replace him. So, yeah, I can see them possibly stumbling, but I think a key is going to be Keylor Navas, whether he's healthy. And if he's healthy, that's a huge advantage for them.
Do you feel Savarillo is sulking at DC? Because, no offense, there are times I watch a DC match, and to me, it feels like either he is somewhat interested or not interested at all to engage.
No, I just think he's not very good right now. I think he's aged, and he hasn't aged well. How old is he right now? Let's see. He's, what, 34?
Uh-huh.
Good Lord, he's my age. So when you get to be my age, you get really old and crotchety. I just think he's just not – he's just – playing his age, and you know, maybe he is sulking at DC. I don't know, but he's not playing well for the national team either. So I think his time has passed. But you know, I don't think you even need to rely on him necessarily anymore if you're Costa Rica, because you have enough talent other places that you can call up and replace that bench spot. So and Costa Rica just has some good players on it. So I think they could nip at the heels of the U.S. and Mexico and grab one of those top two spots, or they could fall to fourth, but I can't see them falling much farther than fourth, minus a huge implosion for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to give a quick update here, and the goal that really doesn't matter in these proceedings, Haiti is leading 1-0 on Jamaica. So, yeah, it doesn't matter, but you know what? It's La France in the 68th minute that scored at the office. And if this is playing for pride, there you have it. So, once again, Robert, it's a situation here that, you know, the U.S. I think right now, if you want to think about as a whole, for these five nations, not yet six, but we'll assume Honduras will advance, but there's still a second half to be played here for both the late-nighters. I think right now the USA is in a good place. Mexico's obviously in a good place. They're dominating, and they haven't lost a match. They haven't given up a point in any of their matches, and we'll see what happens in the second half. But you would definitely have to say for the United States, job well done, and now it's time to get ready for the Hex. let's play these games in October that are just friendlies against Cuba and New Zealand, and then get ready for Mexico in November.
Yeah, and I think you have two opportunities here with these two matches coming up to vet some more players and see, you know, if they're ready to go, and then things start for real in Columbus against Mexico. So there's not going to be a lot of time in between. You got to hope for health for the U.S. team and for good form at the club level, and we'll see if that Columbus magic holds against our biggest rivals.
Absolutely. Well, for Robert Hay, this is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to the USA World Cup qualifier post-game show against Trinidad Tobago. The final score, once again, 4-0. The United States, they leapfrog Trinidad and Tobago. They take the top spot in Group C, and we'll just have to wait to see who's going to take that second spot in Group A. And for Robert Hay, this is Daniel Feuerstein. Robert, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you, as always.
And we'll talk to you next time, folks. Bye-bye for now.